The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. I'm here with a return guest, but the guest hadn't been here for quite some time. Guy Timberlake of the American Small Business Coalition. Guy, welcome back to the show, man.
Mark, happy New Year. Good to be here.
And to you. And been too long. Hopefully, it won't be that long before the next one. But For those out there who don't know you and the ASBC, give a little background, please.
Sure, absolutely. The American Small Business Coalition is a membership organization. My wife and I started back in 2004, and we are exclusively focused on providing support to companies that are doing work or are seeking to do work in the federal sector with defense, civilian, and intelligence agencies. And our big push and our major area of focus is on practical training and education, collaboration, so companies can find the right folks to work with and learn from and do business with. And this is celebrating 13 years now.
13 years, yeah. Celebrations, you know. In 2 weeks when I come here to record a show, it'll be 10 years for me starting year 11 on the radio.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, on this radio. We were both on radio elsewhere.
A little quiet little show in a quiet little town.
Yeah. Man, a long time ago. So give a little background for you on why you left working for other people to do ASBC and a couple of the places where you work. I mean, driving down here, we talked about Pulsar.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if anybody out there remembers Pulsar, and those of us who've been around for a while know. Yeah, so go ahead.
Sure, no, I mean, it's. I think it all started. It was a dark and stormy night in 1988, and I ended up working for a company in Columbia, Maryland that was doing business with the U.S. intelligence community and some other organizations. And they went on to go through some M&A activity to get rid of some foreign ownership and eventually become completely U.S. owned and turned into what is known as NAI Technologies, North Atlantic Industries, a company out of Hallpog. And working there, we worked on programs for the intelligence community and communications and data collection and things of that nature. But that was my entry into the business. I went from there into the mainstream, working for folks like Bill Davis over at Pulsar Data Systems, one of the, truly Beltway bandits. I mean, it was a great company that was in A-Day at the time.
And yeah. It's a strange term, but it's not a derogatory
term. It really isn't. No, I mean, they were on the Beltway, and they did really well for themselves. And this was back in the days of BTG and Sylvest.
And margins for products.
Well, there was actually margins. Imagine that. And above 10 points at that. So, spent time there. I've also worked with a lot of other companies in and around the Beltway, around the country, always on the defense and or intelligence side to some extent, and always in the capacity of initially sales and then business development and capture.
Okay. So so the ASBC is year 13 now. A lot of morphing that's gone on with the ASBC over the years. Take a short dive into the services you offer.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing we do now, and you know, it's called a membership, and it's really morphing into kind of a subscription based activity along with formal membership activities, but a big part of what we do and what, you know, kind of finding our own over the last 4 or 5 years, we get a lot of feedback on the education and training that we do. And it really comes down to helping companies get a clear view of what the competitive landscape looks like, how to focus their efforts, who are they looking at, why are they looking at them. So you'll hear us talk about a lot of things related to, the solicitation procedures, procurement methods that agencies use, telling the difference between contracts and contract vehicles and agreements and understanding what that means to you, and truly understanding things like NAICS codes and how to apply them. And then the mystery meat that's out there still to this day are the product service codes. And again, a lot of folks just don't know about those. I think there's a tremendous awakening about PSC codes with the onset of Alliant 2 earlier last year. So we really try to provide not only fundamentals, but comprehensive training on business processes.
Well, you know, when I had Casey Kelly in here, the PM for Alliant, I should have asked how many companies applied and didn't make the cut.
Sure.
Because they really didn't grasp the PSC side of things. That would have been interesting.
Well, we know that there were a lot of companies who were going back to their issuing agencies for, you know, contracts and tasks they had previously, and getting, I guess, permission slips to attribute some of their work to certain product service codes, mm-hmm. or getting the contracting officers to agree that, yes, that work would definitely fall under that primary product service code, so that they could have the requisite past performance to put on the contract, on their offer.
Right. And when we talk about small businesses later in the show, we'll take a deeper dive into NAICS and PSCs,
sure.
and, you know, crossing T's and dotting I's, because, you know, without that groundwork, you're pretty much toast anyway.
Well, and it impacts every part of the business.
And the scam firms that offer to help you through SAM don't have a clue.
There you go.
One of the things you did not mention, though, there was a couple of things you didn't mention, but one in particular, I teach a market research class that's 4 hours, but, you know, I'm teaching people to ferret out information on government websites, use LinkedIn to vet partners and mm-hmm. find SMEs and things like that. You offer a course that both industry and government uses on ferreting out data from FPDS. Give me a 90-second synopsis there.
Sure. So we you know, years ago, a lot of people may be familiar with a program we started called Ethical Stalking for Government Contractors, which really was the quintessential how to know what you're looking at and understanding how to use it from the standpoint of marketing, BD, and capture. Part of ethical stalking was understanding how to use various resources of information. And at the top of the list of resources is the Federal Procurement Data System Next Generation, which is very often misunderstood by a lot of folks as to what it does. So one of the programs that we offer, about seven of them, fall in this vein, we have a multiple FPDS courses ranging from teaching people the nuts and bolts of understanding what this system is and what it does, to excelling at exploiting the easy search function, and then going more advanced into the standard reports and the ad hoc function, being able to build your own queries, capture more than the 22 attributes you're allowed in the easy search. And the premise for this is that a lot of the tools that folks purchase for market intelligence also use FPDS directly or indirectly as a primary source of the information they make available, but not all of it. They're only able to capture certain aspects, so that means to answer certain questions, you've got to be able to go into FPDS and apply those attributes to get those answers. But it really is something that helps companies direct their marketing efforts, help them really validate some of their business development, lead generation, things of that nature, then also solidify their capture.
Okay. Cool. But, you know, the bottom line, and the reason I wanted to bring that up is FPDS is core to the success of anybody that's not just selling, truly generic products via, you know, either schedule or open market.
Yep.
Your ability to ferret out who's bought what, when, which vehicles were employed, and you know, 20 different other things I don't know how many different things, because I need to refresh that course myself.
Hundreds of attributes,
yeah.
and it's everything you said, plus the fact that companies can look at not only who's buying, but who's funding, and it all really depends on what your business is. If you sell an HP widget, then all you really need to know is who are the organizations buying HP widgets, and you're golden. But if you've got a product or service where you need to really understand and get in front of the customer, not the buyers, and convince them or convey to them the virtues of working with you, then you've got to be able to get a little bit more ahead of the game and understand where the requisitions are coming from, who's building the requirements.
Right, and that relationship side of the market, the trusted source, are things that we both emphasize in various trainings for different reasons.
Absolutely.
Actually, ultimately, for the same reason.
Exactly.
We're going to cut the first segment short here and take a break now. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. I'm here with Guy Timberlake. You can find Guy at the THEASBC.org or on LinkedIn, THEASBC.org. Back in a minute. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Guy Timberlake today. Guy, you can find at LinkedIn or at the ASBC.org. Guy, this past year, you were put on the board of AFSCEA. Number one, for the two or three people out there who may not know AFSCEA, tell them what that means and what your role is at AFSCEA.
Sure. So one, I mean, AFSCEA is an organization. The Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association is a, in my opinion, institutional membership organization for anyone in government contracting.
Not just Armed Forces.
Not just Armed Forces, correct. That is interested in not only collaboration, business opportunities and education, but also helping to truly make a difference through a number of the different initiatives that AFSCEA has going on, like their cyber committee and others. And the organization's been there since 1946, right after the end of World War II, and they've got over 30,000 members worldwide, and so it's a great organization.
Chapters everywhere.
I mean, in the D.C. area alone, I think it's now I think 7 or 8 chapters.
Yeah. So if you want to do business at Fort Meade, Central Maryland,
exactly,
is your chapter. If you want to do business on the 270 corridor, the Bethesda chapter. There's
there
one in D.C. There's a Nova chapter.
Nova
there's one up in
the
Aberdeen.
Largest one, Fort Belvoir, APG. Yeah. Exactly right. So they do a lot of great things, and so through the friendship and efforts of one of your former compatriots on our board from years ago, Vice Admiral Jerry Tuttle, Jerry put the word in to AFSCEA leadership and asked them to consider me, and they did, and I joined the board of directors for AFSCEA International, and in addition to that, I'm also supporting and serving on the AFSCEA International Small Business Committee, and I've taken on the role as the chair of the Education and Training Subcommittee also. So we're putting together some great programs, very much in the spirit of the things that Katie Helwig, who is the program manager, as it were, director for small business programs there, has been doing for years. And so I'm happy to be working with her and working with Rebecca Andino from Highlight Technologies, who's the co-chair of the Small Business Committee, and Sukumar, who's the other chair from Brilliant. And it's two great folks leading the organization. And it's fun because it really does serve a purpose. AFSCEA, again, is, it is very simple, very easy to get involved. I mean, you can become a member, for $50 or $55 a year as an individual member. So it's not the money whatsoever. And even corporate membership for small businesses is less than $500. The key is getting engaged. It's finding a chapter that aligns to the missions that your company is trying to support based on customers, and also getting involved in the organizations, get on a committee somehow, some way, like the chapter-based small business committees. And so there are any other number of opportunities, but it produces results for a lot of people.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about networking venues, and AFSCEA generally leads the list for me when I do that. But from my perspective, there are very few events, if any, that I'd prefer to speak at.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I was a featured speaker at a small biz DHS conference two and a half years ago, and last year I did an hour presentation at HQ on LinkedIn, and it was overflow. It was the room only held 40 people, and around the sides of the walls and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
And you're getting, really, although it's very focused on, again, the communications electronics arenas for government, you get such a diversity of companies in there, not just from a discipline standpoint, but obviously size, experience, and capabilities. It makes for really good networking, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great place to establish or expand your company's sensor arrays, as it were, to keep gathering information on, what's happening, taking a barometer of what's happening in the space.
Yeah, when I do my building a SME platform workshop, the gathering intel, if you want to be a subject matter expert, your learning never stops, but it's targeted learning. The narrower your niche, the more focused the learning has to be.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be, if you're going to be a SME, a small subject matter expert in the government arena, you have to start with the big picture and then ferret down to your niche. Because if you don't have that big picture in mind, your niche may get stepped on and you don't even know it's coming.
Exactly right.
So let's migrate. There's a lot of things that the small business community needs to become aware of. So let's start with those that kind of popped up in a subtle mode, shall we say, in NDAA.
Sure. Well, and one of the things I'll start with is, I had a short series of articles last year leading up to the NDAA, being signed into law, and there was some language, as there always is every time it comes around, there's always some language that is going to be, disparagingly impactful to someone. And in this case, there was something in there that was really going to be hurtful to the small business community, although it really didn't look like it. And that was the one of the rules that came out of the Senate on major defense acquisition programs. And thankfully, this one didn't make it through conference. But the net effect of this particular rule going in, which I call it a head fake rule, because the way it looked is it looked like DOD was simply trying to create more opportunities for small businesses to subcontract on these major defense programs where small businesses customarily just aren't going to be able to compete as a prime. But the net effect of it, which was allowing DOD to count first and second tier subcontract dollars towards their set-aside dollars, is it was replacement. They would be able to take dollars that currently are not counted toward their set-aside goals and apply them that way. And we looked at, did some calculations and saw about $20 to $22 billion in small business set-aside dollars that would not have to occur if DOD was allowed to count those subcontract dollars.
Okay.
So that was one of the big things for me that I was paying a lot of attention to, trying to raise the alarm. Stephen Coprince and Mark, obviously you introduced me to him years ago. And
Coprince Law.
Absolutely. Coprince Law and the Small Business Guide to Government Contracts that he wrote those years ago does a phenomenal job keeping his finger on the pulse from a compliance and policy standpoint for small business. And folks, if you don't know about his blog, it's www.smallgovcon.com. And Steve did a wrap-up back on January 6th, and his group had put together probably 17 articles on different aspects of the NDAA that would be most pertinent to small business, one of which was the changing of VA's authority under the SDVOSB program. So that was one at the top of the key that really was getting a lot of attention. There's the one that a lot of folks are hearing about now, which is restricting DOD's use of LPTA. There were changes to DOD's micro purchase threshold, modifying ownership control criteria, things of that nature. So it's just a plethora of information that is really well written, but it's this kind of awareness that companies need to have every step of the way, and Steve Coprince and his team do a really good job of making that easily available to you.
Yeah, and Steve focuses exclusively on his practice, small business contracting. So, you know, if you have the family lawyer who's done your will and, you know, set up the trust for the kids, and they say, oh, we do government contracting too. We've seen this.
We see it all the time.
Way too often.
Yeah.
Coprint, Steve does nothing but small business government contracting. If I have a question or if Guy has a question, it's usually the first place we go. And, even if you don't know him, you're going to get a fairly rapid response.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly rapid, depending on his workload. But, you know, just, and if you have a question, go to the blog first.
A lot of questions can be answered. His blog is very well put together in that you've got all the key topics, you know, popular posts on the right side, the key tags.
Yep.
And if you're an 8A, if you're a woman owned small business, you're a hub zone, you have compliance issues, need to talk about affiliation or limitations on subcontracting. It's all there. It's a really well put together piece of information.
Yep. So, Coprint's, is place now, there's other, I use Jerry Miles.
Oh, sure.
I use Gunjan Talata. David
DeLano,
Cohen and I are
Panicelli
still in touch.
Do a great job too.
Yeah. But Steve answers my questions faster than anybody else. So he's job number one.
Exactly right.
So,
if you get a chance, folks, take a look at the 2017 NDAA Government Contracting Roundup. It's an article that Steve put out there that actually ties into about 17 different articles written by he and some of the associates in his firm. And if you don't have this information now and you don't understand how it's going to impact you doing business going forward, you're going to be at a disadvantage.
Yeah, you're going to go through an intersection and be blindsided by a Mack truck.
Absolutely.
So that
Mack truck has the license plate FAR. So.
Yeah. anything else about NDA we need to know about right now?
No, again, it's there.
Okay.
There's a lot of traffic coming out right now. We're going to continue to see, chatter about it, implementation on some of the rules that are coming from it. Again, the one I want to watch the most is not only what's happening with VA and the veterans program, but also the small business program relative to mentor protege. The all small program is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
and potentially, a game changer for the small business community.
Right.
Game changer, to the positive for a lot of companies and probably lesser so for certain ones. And again, just, as you read through it and try to understand, again, the impact on 8A companies, a lot of the rights and privileges that were previously reserved exclusively for them seems to have been watered down somewhat.
Another trickle-down effect.
Absolutely.
There you go. Well, you're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. When Guy and I return after these breaks, we're going to talk about newbies and networking. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. I'm here with Guy Timberlake of the American Small Business Coalition. THEASBC.org. Guy, you and I both deal with this on an extraordinarily regular basis. The companies that call, and it does, usually they're small, sometimes they're larger,
mm-hmm.
But they have no clue, but they hear that, there's wheelbarrows owe money to be had.
There's gold in them there hills.
Right. And, we're a veteran-owned business. We're a hub, we live in a poor area. I'm a minority, whatever. Where's my money?
Mm-hmm.
Going into the market, let's talk about what a company needs to do. I get a number of calls predicated on the last book, Selling to the Government.
I just got a call from someone the other day who saw your reference to us in there and gave me a call and is joining our group and coming aboard. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I reference only people that I trust there, unless we're talking about scammers. And let's get this out of the way right up front so we don't have to revisit
yep.
it. If you register in SAM and you get a call from somebody saying that they are the official helper to walk you through the GSA schedule process or to help you get your set aside, hang up the phone because in all likelihood it's a scam shop. All of the legitimate companies that I deal with that can help you at any step of the process do not cold call companies that have registered in SAM.
Well, and that's true, and I'm trying to pull up the website right now, but basically I think there's still language on the SAM website that makes reference to there is no fee
for registering
in SAM.
Yeah.
And what's happened is you've got a number of companies, and it's just like a lot of the folks, Mark, that we came across years and years ago that were scamming everyone on GSA schedules. They get this call, and they try to make themselves sound like they're calling from GSA or something like that. But basically, you know, one, the government doesn't charge to create a registration. Now, I know some folks who have done it and found value in working with some of the organizations, I'm not going to name any of them, where they helped them kind of get over the hump, also did some preliminary marketing for them, things like that. That's great, and that's fine. But the ones that I think Mark and I are referring to, you know, the amount they charge and the net effect that we've heard from a lot of folks, which
the
is a complete
effect.
Waste of time. Yeah, it's a waste of time. It was harmful to their business. And
yeah.
So that's what you want to look out for.
Yeah, and I just had a call this past week. Somebody who had, one of those companies helped them with GSA schedule. And the reason they called me was they had read my book after and said, can you aim us at somebody who can help us straighten out this mess.
Right.
So
yeah, we get those a lot. And
yeah.
We had a company who, you know, had been rejected. And then the company that they were working with probably lost their phone number. They were working, trying to find someone to help them get it straightened out. So we ended up making a referral to one of the folks that we know and trust very much. So,
yeah, I mean, and we generally use the same short gene pool of references. So, and I'll plug a couple of them. Courtney Fairchild, Richard Mackey.
Mm-hmm.
I use Barbara Kanowski, too,
yep,
over
absolutely.
At Center Law.
I know Barb.
Mm-hmm. Kelly Mirbot up in, I think she's New York area / New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jennifer
for the life of me, I can't
think. Is doing good work down here too, Jennifer Schaus.
Okay. Yep. Yes, Jennifer. and I'm embarrassed, but there's a woman in Boise that I've worked with, and I just can't remember her name. So I'll have to plug her in another show. I met her way back in when I was consulting with Micron, so the relationship goes back 20 years.
Okay.
And, you know, my brain's shrinking anyway. But let's do a short list of things that companies coming into the market. You know, I think American Express is trying to do a good job with their program.
Yeah, they are.
But the research I like. Julie Weeks just does some wonderful stuff. But part of the hype that's out there is, if you're a small business, if you're a woman-owned business, you know,
yep.
they're adding fuel to a fire. It's like DOD going out to Silicon Valley and saying to the small businesses, hey, there's tons of money here.
Right.
Well, if your infrastructure ain't there, there's a ton of trouble there.
Absolutely.
So,
well, and I think
things
part
small
of this,
businesses can do.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things is this. First of all, a lot of the conversation that goes on right now, coming from government and also coming from some of the folks out there that want to make money off of companies entering these programs, is teaching folks to position themselves as a socioeconomic-based or focused organization rather than a skills-based organization. So they lead with their designation rather than what they do and have done well. And it minimizes them. And we hear this all the time. You talk to the folks, the small business liaisons and program managers at places like, you know, former EDS and DynCorp and places like that. You know, you talk to, you know, my friend Diane Dempsey. You talk to Deborah Jackson Hamilton, you know, over at HP Enterprise and so forth. They want companies that actually bring the goods. It's not just because you've got a badge that says you're, you know, 8A or economically disadvantaged or whatever. So I think that's a big part, is really try to change the mindset there. The other part is what we were talking about previously, GSA schedules. And it's not a ding on GSA schedules. it is a ding on the belief system that's established out there that the schedule is the end-all, be-all vehicle out there. And don't get me wrong, you know, the net sales on the GSA schedule are absolutely more than I got in my bank account, but it still represents a small percentage of the overall spending in government contracting. So that means there are lots of other ways that companies need to investigate based on who they're trying to align with as customers, based on what their offering is, their pricing methodology, all these things.
Yeah, and again, you know, the designation for any set aside category is the icing; it's never the cake. So, you know, my friend Ken Marks runs Anacapa out in Oxnard, California. It's been doing this for years and years. They're a hub zone, okay, and it's a legitimate hub zone area. So, not one of these weird. We won't go there. Most universities are hub zone because students are generally unemployed.
Yeah. Hey, I just learned that Penn State was a hub zone the other day. So,
well, there's a lot of reasons for that. But,
well, and you know what I'll say is, and to your point, though, I mean, we, you know, we look at folks like, you know, our friends over at Patriot Group International, you know, PGI, you know, Rob Allen and Greg over there. You know, got the company up and running, you know, about 6 years ago when I first met them, and were, you know, no dollars, maybe $1 million, somewhere in there. And the company is doing really, really well. And I'll say, if you, you know, read the press and the Inc. 5000, you'll see that they've gone from, you know, 20s to 30s in millions of dollars a year in revenues. They're not really playing in the small business or socioeconomic arena. They're a veteran-owned small business. They're not serviceable veteran-owned, so they're not really putting a lot of weight on that. And plus, those spaces they play in, quite honestly, they really don't care about socioeconomic. It's not, you know, what's important to those customers. And so, you know, it can be done.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, one of the reasons I brought up Anacapa is they sell direct to the government. They represent your, I mean, they're basically an IT reseller, okay? Don't focus on a particular technology. But they understand the game well enough to know where they fit, and they can leverage the hub zone on occasion. So one of the companies that I deal with is service disabled. A contract was supposed to come out in the service disabled category at the last minute. It was switched over to the hub zone. So they called Ken. Ken, you know, led. You know, this company followed, but they melded nicely. So Ken plays well with other people.
Absolutely.
He's also been awarded Small Business Contractor of the Year, Supplier of the Year to a couple of the large players in our market.
Hey, the channel is alive and well.
Yeah, the channel's alive and well. And there's a variety of reasons the government uses the set-aside program and a lot of reasons that the primes and mediums, medium-sized business and other smalls use other smalls. So, but you have to know how. You just can't come in and say, this is who I am. Ken has been doing this for 20-plus years. He's got a reputation in the market. He's a trusted player.
Here's that word again.
Yeah. So the relationship comes into play hugely. Item number two, where do they begin? Where does a newbie begin the education process?
I mean, for me, it really starts with research. They really need to get information that they can use to begin understanding, you know, what is the most viable point of entry. You know, it's not any one thing. It's a combination of things. You know, you won't necessarily be able to acquire a contract vehicle coming in the door, especially if you don't have any experience. You know, if you're an established company commercially and you want to come into the federal sector, then the GSA schedule is likely a potential for you, but you need to really weigh that based on your model on what the impact would be to your existing business versus what the future business is. You need to understand what the small business programs mean to you based on, again, the totality of items, customers, products and services, and so forth. You know, I've got a referral coming in right now from an aviation company from one of my local friends, a proposal manager, and the company, I'm astounded. And I'm not really, because who they're working with, I know why they're being so smart, because she's making them. But they're coming in and they're asking good questions before jumping off the board into, you know, the 8A program or the Hub Zone program, something like that. And so it really, you really need to do some research. And research is not, in my opinion, not completely expensive and not hard to achieve. It's not a long, drawn-out process. Folks that know this business, that know the landscape, that know what they're looking at, you know, big picture and in specific verticals, can provide the, you know, the information that somebody needs to make an initial assessment relatively quickly and easily. But a lot of that depends on how well the company knows itself and can talk about, you know, really what it is they do, or that they have somebody pull it out of them.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Guy and I will be back to talk about newbies and networkings very shortly. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Mark AmTower here with Guy Timberlake of the American Small Business Coalition. One more time, THEASBC.org. You know, I was on the board of the ASBC for the first 5 years that they were open. I had the honor and privilege to serve as chair for three of those years with people like Jerry Tuttle and Allegra McCullough and some just really, really cool folks. And ASBC provides an extraordinary value to the small business community and helps companies willing to work start right. And a lot of consultants, myself included, I often don't like working with newbies because their expectations are too near term.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about American Express briefly before. One of the things that I like about the American Express Open Program is the research they do. Julie Weeks, again, does just some extraordinary stuff there. But the first study is what got both of our attentions.
Right.
And it validated what we knew, but it put specific dates and, hard numbers on it. So 19 and a half months to win your first business.
Right.
If you were moving in the right direction, and if you spent, the first study was about $85,000 when they came out.
Exactly.
A little later on, it was up to about $105,000.
It was a little over $100,000, right?
But it's not necessarily cash spent. It can be internal resources dedicated to understanding the process and identifying the right business to go after.
Mm-hmm.
But it also involves spending money on the right outside help, not some slime ball who's calling you and saying, I can get you a GSA schedule. He's not asking what you do.
Right.
They're just assuming that you believe a GSA schedule is going to be manna.
Exactly.
And it ain't.
It ain't.
Not for everybody.
Well, no, I mean,
not for those waiting for the phone to ring.
Exactly. Well, I mean, Mark, I remember years ago, I mean, you know, when I took some of your classes long time ago, and then just over the years, you know, we used to, you know, really kind of have the same, you know, harmonious response to folks about 24 months to realize, you know, a significant piece of business. And you know, we weren't even talking cost at that time because,
right.
I mean, I think we probably both and a lot of other folks had an idea but never had any metrics to wrap around it. But, Amex did great, you know, putting that in paper, but I don't think a lot of folks realize it. And it's like you said, it's not necessarily writing a check for that amount. It is sometimes tied to level of effort. How much of your time are you going to spend doing the things necessary, because you're going to have to do them at some point. And it's more efficient to do it the right way the first time than to go back and have to do it over.
Yeah.
And which is what a lot of companies end up doing, is going back and having to fix, reposition themselves based on a corrective measure. But no. And so that costs, a lot of companies need to take this into consideration and look at the entire risk reward. I mean, if you're going to have to invest this time, this money to get somewhere, is that the investment you're willing to make, that you want to make? Because a lot of folks we see just don't have the patience. They believe, because there are just so many pennies falling from heaven all the time in this business, that it should happen overnight. Oh, wait, you mean it's not awarded yet? I don't have that contract yet? And so it really comes down to, again, managing expectations. And unfortunately, a lot of folks don't do a good job or a realistic job of setting expectations. And maybe it's because it makes it more appealing and more sexy to kind of get people perched on the edge of their seat because they think there's a million-dollar piece coming to them next week when it really ain't.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just so many factors that come into play, but you know, one of the major factors, if not the major factor in this market, is the relationship aspect. So I'll go back to the AFCEA thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I get a lot of questions via LinkedIn, email, and sometimes phone, pretty much everywhere where I go. Personally, to network, where are the best places to network?
Right.
And there is no one-size-fits-all. But we talked about AFCEA. So if you want to do business on the 270 corridor, health IT in particular, or the bio side of things, AFCEA, Bethesda is one of the premier things. Maryland Tech Council also focuses on that 270 corridor. So those are extremely viable alternatives. You know, do business at the Fort. Number one, you can go to the AFCEA Central Maryland lunches. But if you're not already a player, if you're not known by that community, breaking in is not a 24-month gig. Right. It's more like a five-year gig.
Exactly right.
You know, and I don't care what product or service you
exactly.
have.
Well, and one of the things, I mean, again, so what's not a secret is just a number of activities and organizations that exist, not just in this town, nationally, you know, for government contracting. I mean, it's a boom business. People are going to try to capitalize on it, and you're going to have folks that, you know, actually legitimately mean well, and then others who are just trying to cash in. So part of what you need to look for, and you taught me these things years ago, is, you know, leverage your network. Leverage the people that you know, like, and trust to help you understand what the value is of participating in things. You know, I grew up in the Fosse era, and Fosse, you know, had value for a long time for a lot of companies like mine that were in the IT arena. It fell off, and then so did Fosse.
Well, it started when Office Products, it was the Federal Office Products Expo, Office Systems Expo.
Right.
But, you know, when computers were new and sexy, and when you, a color printer on my PC, Zowie, Batman.
Exactly.
You know, but it became mundane, and the show could not morph to keep pace.
And so what you've got to look at is there's so many tiers of types of activities for networking and visibility. So if it's a trade show, if it's an expo, if it's just a standard networking event that someone's hosting, you know, one of the things you want to look for is what is the focus, what is the alignment, who's supporting it, you know, industry and government. I will tell you, I mean, you know, one of the organizations out there that I had the pleasure of working with, you know, when they first came on the scene, and you know, and I consider David Blackburn a really good guy, is the G2 Exchange. If you are working in health IT and you don't know G2 Exchange, you're missing out because Dave and his crew not only put on some phenomenal events, I've had the pleasure of facilitating a couple of those. They push out just some really useful information on a regular basis. I mean, it's a machine. And it's a really good machine. And so what you're looking for are those organizations that are basically the ecosystems that you want to be a part of.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a number of providers. You know, Mike Smoyer at Digital Government puts on some very focused, very excellent forums. Peg Hosky produces single topic events through Fed Insider and for vendors. I believe Mike does some for vendors as well.
Yep.
You know, Federal Business Council, when they put on one of their larger events or agency-focused events, generally those are very good venues. But, you know, I was at the Soup Conference. Joanne actually took everything inside this time and totally produced their three-day event. You know, wasn't all open, no exhibits. So it was purely informational, different tracks each day. But I went down there for one day. And if, you know, if you're on the Soup contract, you've got to be here.
Right.
You You know, because you're going to get some OEMs that come in that are looking for conduits.
Yep.
You're going to get some primes coming in that are looking for partners.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have your other contractors there. And the contractor panel was sharing information that any of those contractors could and should use.
Right, exactly. So, well, and to the point also, I mean, there's something out there for everyone. You know, whether it's, you know, the executive, the business leader, whether it's the folks that are responsible for the business development, the intelligence gathering, the SMEs on the product and service side, or even, Mark, the organization that you and I are associated with, you know, from a marketing standpoint.
Government Marketing University.
Government Marketing University.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are responsible in any way, shape, or form for marketing and your company has got traction in the IT arena, the things that Lou Ann is doing over there, and then the level of content, the conversations. I mean, one of the very first events I went to before I became, you know, a professor for the organization was a panel of five former CIO, Fed CIOs who were just talking, just case in point about how you get my attention, how you don't, why you want to, why you don't. And I had fun because I think I was like the only guy in the room that wasn't selling anything, at least to those kind of folks. And so I got to ask all sorts of questions that I think a lot of the other folks who were more in the business side didn't want to have to ask. And so,
right, didn't want to be identified
exactly,
as asking.
But, and
right.
it worked out. And I, you know,
but everybody wanted to know the answer.
Exactly. But those are the type of things that you want to look for is really where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. And remember, it's an investment. So if you're going to go to these organizations, especially if they're membership-driven, get involved.
Yeah.
Because you'll get a lot of traction that way.
Yeah. And there, we'll touch very briefly on several. Affirm has been around now for 30 plus years.
Right.
And their monthly luncheons focus on a specific agency. And it's a great networking and educational venue.
Mm-hmm.
ACT-IAC still has some good networking educational venues. Professional Services Council.
Yep.
If you're doing you know, on the higher end services side, not lawn keeping or something, you know, they're excellent. Other venues, you know, I like Dell Techs because sometimes they're sharing information I want, mm-hmm. but more for the networking.
Right.
I've gone to a number of Bloomberg events. Generally, I like them. On rare occasion, you know, time better spent elsewhere.
Sure.
But that can happen to any
form. It can happen anywhere. And so, and one of the ones, if I can give a quick plug for a group that I'm supporting right now, so the state of Maryland has received a grant from the Department of Defense, the Office of Economic Adjustment, and this was focused originally on creating some diversification awareness and opportunities for companies in Maryland that were dependent on DOD dollars. And obviously, we all saw some of the downturn in spending there. So I'm actually a technical advisor to an organization called the Maryland Defense Network. It's something hosted by the Maryland Department of Commerce. It is, I work with Towson University directly, who is one of the facilitators who's helping develop this. And if you go to MarylandDefenseNetwork.org, you'll see the information online, or I'm sorry, MarylandDefenseNetwork.com. But again, it's the state of Maryland, and what they're doing is providing information to Maryland contractors so that they can use the information, one, for partnering, teaming, getting more awareness of what's happening in Maryland defense organizations.
Mm-hmm.
But Department of Commerce has also been putting on some activities, networking and collaborative opportunities, speaking engagements. And then there are all the different alliances around the state of Maryland, like the Fort Meade Alliance and so forth, who are also tied to this. That creates some other value. So if you're a Maryland defense contractor, check out the Maryland Defense Network when you have an opportunity, and that could be another avenue for you to get some additional information networking as well.
Cool. Guy, thanks for coming in, man. Been too long, and we got to do it again much, much sooner.
I look forward to it. Thanks for having me in, Mark.
There you go. We live about 10 minutes apart, so you know when we can, we'll just get together and drive down.
Exactly.
There you go. You have been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio. This is not my day job. I advise companies like Guy does on he focuses more on getting traction from the contractual vehicles. How do you cue that up? I focus exclusively on the marketing side and leveraging social, especially LinkedIn. LinkedIn is an extraordinary viable marketing tool for the government contracting universe. There's 1.6 million feds on LinkedIn. At least 15% of those have IT job titles. Another 20% have legitimate management titles, so they're GS-14s and above through the CIO level. If you need help there, give me a shout. Just shoot me a line at markamtower@gmail.com. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.